our fourth week of a harder recovery. This is the ninth time we've done this harder recovery. And tonight's topic is the step four process. And that is going to be done by Kevin Bost. Let's give him a big hand, everybody.
My name is Kevin. I'm very grateful, recovered alcoholic. And recovered addict, and I qualify for a lot of the rooms. Before I get into a wildly popular subject of the fourth step, which is our personal inventory, which is the beginning, it's the beginning of the action of the program, right? Some might say it's the beginning of the most difficult part. You know, once we get over the hurdle of, I'm in trouble deep, I need help, oh, I need God's help. Right, and then there's some action on how we start to experience more and more and more of God's help flowing into us. Let's hear it for Crimson Blues. They were rocking. So first, I will forever be eternally grateful. That's kind of redundant, forever and eternal, right? For the man who has shown me how to look at me at the level that that I have today. And I don't know if that makes sense, but meaning that I was shown the steps process several times before I came across this teacher. And I can only do this process to the best that I'm being shown. And there's a recovery process that in theory, is our way out. It's a key that unlocks some doors that I didn't even know were locked. So if you want what we have, do what we do, right? And so I didn't even know what I was after for years, right? I was after not drinking, not drugging, and that's to be celebrated. But I found that I couldn't do that on my own accord. Right? No matter how hard I tried, I ended up failing and falling, which means I was relapsing. And the third step asks us to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understand Him. And it's the beginning of developing some God reliance. And sometimes that's the first influx of a spiritual experience at times. Right? But the text says, now we need to go further. Right? Which means we launched on a course of vigorous action. And some notes at this point. So, knowing that the goal for an alcoholic or an addict, it says, if you are a real alcoholic and addict, you may be suffering from an illness. First of all, I didn't like that I was told I had an illness, but that's a study for another night. But we may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. What if that's me? Now, if I have that awareness, right? And I have the idea that I need a relationship with God as a way out. Okay, how do I build that? How do I establish that? Let's assume that we're already past that point, that I know I need a spiritual experience, which is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. What's the beginning of the steps process? Me looking at me, right? Me looking at me. So the man who was my third sponsor, who was my first real teacher, he gave me the analogy of a construction site, right? And so usually when you go to a construction site, usually there is there's a barrier all the way around the city block, you know, 8 foot, 10 foot high plywood wall. And then you see an artist's rendition of this beautiful crystal tower that's going to be placed here, right? But usually there's something that pre-exists there. Maybe it's a 110-year-old brick and mortar structure, unreinforced, unseismically reinforced structure, that what needs to happen first? Here comes the wrecking ball. Got to knock that structure down before a new structure can be built. What's the new structure? The new structure ultimately is going to be me, right? But the new structure is built through spiritual experience, through an influx of God's Spirit that transforms the human being, that transforms the thinking and transforms the heart so powerfully that we couldn't even drink if we wanted to. See, that's what transpires here. It's not, okay, I'm here and I'm just not drinking one more day and I almost drank today. That doesn't sound anything like freedom, right? What we're talking about is a path that leads to freedom. The text says we turn to the past because it held a key, right, to our future, right? So something is going to be opened up and I'm going to walk through. And when it becomes our experience, you know it, right? If it's not our experience, it's not our experience, right? So what happens is after that wrecking ball comes through, right, then you've got dump truck after dump truck after debris box of material being hauled away. That's the process that needs to transpire before I come and go, hey, I'm brand new, right? So there's a process that transpires. Now, God can work miracles. He can make me all brand new if he sees fit. But I do find what's most effective for us alcoholics and addicts, if I humble myself and I move into this process, something starts to happen. An amazing structure is built, right? So I must be willing to go to any lengths to find that spiritual experience. And step four and the steps, it's not easy. It says in our text, simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. So we also know that the text says there's clear-cut, precise directions showing how we recovered, right? So there's clear-cut, precise directions, yet my disease always says, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to do it this way, right? So what I leave is that dilapidated structure stays in place, but I'm in there putting up new curtains. I'm pumping in a new sound system, and I definitely have to have something sexy, pretty, or handsome, or strong, or whatever your thing is. They're right with me to keep me company, and I say, ain't things grand, right? But I'm still a dilapidated structure. My foundation is not so stable, right? And usually the proof is in the pudding. At some point, you're going to know I'm not recovered because I'm going to drink and drug again, or my very behavior is going to be not so pretty. And I'm going to act as if I'm acting so much better than I really am, right? We're talking about a transformation to where our whole attitude and outlook upon life changes. How we react to the outside world changes, right? So we're just trying to paint a picture of what should make this desirable to where, okay, I'm willing, I'm hopeful, I'm encouraged, right? It's about being encouraged. So the individuals that wrote this text, and I'm nearing 52. My eyesight is falling off the hill rather quickly here. But I guess 52 might be young, right? So it says, here are thousands of men and women that flatly declare that since they've come to believe in a power, right? See, after my hopelessness, the awareness is, okay, I believe that God can do this thing for me. Usually it takes me being broken first. But they come to believe in a power and to take a certain attitude towards that power. That's my step three. I take a certain attitude towards that power. And it's God help me, but it's also God do with me. I give you me to do with me. It's not, oh, God help me so that I can keep enjoying my life the way I want to enjoy my life. That's called selfishness. That's called the problem. That's what I suffer from, right? And so this is about eradication of selfishness, to where there is a flowing of selflessness out of me into the world, transformation. And a byproduct of that is I don't drink and drug, and not drinking and drugging is now easy. The impression is that it's easy because God is doing it for me, right? I'm not drinking and drugging, right? God is my defense, right? Okay, so they flatly declare that since they have taken a certain attitude towards that power, which is God, and to do certain simple things, right? And I'll talk about the certain simple things. In doing those, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living. Revolutionary, radical change in the way we live and a radical change in the way we think. The motives that were driving me have now been shifted and there's a new set of concepts that direct my life today, right? Okay. So the personal inventory, that's my subject tonight. It's fact-finding and fact-facing. I didn't have the ability to look at me. I never really saw the things in me that I needed to discover so that I can bring them out into the light, have an honest conversation with another human being and say, hey, guess what? These are the things I've discovered about me that I'm not proud of. These are the things that are my secrets. These are the things that happened to me that I don't ever want anybody to know, right? I've learned that I need to be honest with myself about myself, but I didn't know how. I did not know how. I knew that stealing a Snickers bar from Target was dishonest. I knew that. But I still had a hard time telling you I did those things, right? But the process requires those things. Check this out. It says, there is a solution, and almost none of us liked it, right? And so it's a drastic solution. Drastic to what? My pride, my ego. That's what prohibits me from doing the deal, right? It says, there is a solution, and almost none of us liked it. The self-searching. That's what this process is. It's a self-searching. The leveling of our pride, and then ultimately, the confessing of my shortcomings. That which I discover, I need to share with another human being. And there's a process by which we find that human being, right? But the fifth step's for another night. So it says, these things, the process requires for its successful consummation. So in order for me to have successful consummation, spiritual experience, the process requires these things. But watch how we try to bake a cake without an egg, a flour, or sugar, or something. I want my cake, but I don't want to put the ingredients into it. So I act as if I'm enjoying cake, right? I act as if. And you say, how are you doing? Fine, right? And as soon as somebody does something like plays 3 minutes too long or talks 7 minutes too long, I'm all agitated because I suffer from what's in it for me. Or do I have a degree of peace regardless of what's going down? Because God's in charge. Is he genuinely in charge? Is that your experience? Or is that what you hope for? See, I just need to be honest. Where am I at? No, I don't really have that, but I hope for it. Great. This lesson is for you, right? Because it's available to each and every one of us. I am not special. I'm just a drunk that's found this way out, that has dived into this thing. And you know what? People around me notice. When I dive into this process, you know. Right? You know. Okay. So with the awareness of what the third step is, and with the awareness that selfishness and self-centeredness is my dilemma, and as a byproduct of my dilemma, I can't not drink and I can't not drug. That's a byproduct of the dilemma. See, my liquor and my drugging, that's a symptom. It's not the problem. Right? It's a symptom. It's not the cause. So the text says we have to get down to the cause and the condition that produces in me this overwhelming desire to get loaded, because I can't stand being in me. I can't stand me, and I can't stand you, because I feel uncomfortable with how the world is behaving. I need a drink. That's the dilemma. So that uneasiness gets smoothed out to where I can now tolerate the world. And I can tolerate me, and tolerate is an understatement of what goes down, right? Pressing on. So suffering from bondage of self, we have to identify with that which keeps us in bondage, okay? So we're to search out the obstacles in us that are causing me to feel uncomfortable in sobriety. Whether I got 3 hours sober, 3 days sober, 3 years sober, or 3 decades sober, I can benefit from this process, right? See, I have a disease that tells me I don't really need to do that. After all, I'm X years sober now, right? And so if I'm bragging about my length of sobriety, I got to say, well, where's my humility in that either God has done for me what I could never do for myself, or am I doing something called my own program? But if I want to do Alcoholics Anonymous, here's the gig, right? So I just need to be honest. Am I doing the program of recovery as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which preceded NA and CA and OA and FA and SLA and GA, right? And Al-Anon and Alateen and every 12-step program? Here's the process. There is no differentiation between the process. We just judge the rooms. Their program, that program, their program, his program. No, it's the program. There's the process of recovery, which transforms the human heart and produces in us more and more God reliance, more and more God dependence, to where we have the joy of living even under pressure and difficulties. Even when the proverbial stuff is hitting the fan, we have a sense of calm, a sense of peace, a sense of purpose, a sense of direction, and God is good even when I'm not getting my way. How about that level of recovery? Because we're not talking about sobriety and clean time now. We're talking about recovery, being restored to health. That thing that only God can do. Right? Okay, that was a good one. Okay. So the text goes on to say, having made our decision, okay, I want it. I want it. What do I have to do? Right? Having made my decision. Having made my decision, what shall we do? Okay, it says, next we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Right? X years, X days, X months sober, which many of us have never attempted. I don't know why we wait 16 months or 16 years to do the deal, right? But we just do. Because I need to be mindful of, am I really being taught what the real process is, right? Or are we saying, fake it till you make it, come have another piece of cake, and we're loving you to death, right? But by all means, have cake, fellowship with us. I don't want to deter from the beauty that that level of love is. I just need to be honest about the deal, because people are dying left and right. And we're going, man, well, I guess he really didn't want it bad enough. See, but what if I'm denying you an opportunity to get this thing because I'm not pursuing it like my life depends upon it? When I pursue it like my life depends upon it, then people go, I want what he has. I want that thing. I'm getting chills telling you this. Because the man that stood in front of me 25 or 6 years ago, I was a year and 6 months sober. I said, I want that. I want what he's talking about. Right? So it says, though our decision, our third step, was vital and crucial, my decision to seek God could have little permanent effect. It has an effect, but it says it could have little permanent effect. We're after permanent recovery. Right? Could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face, take a look at, and be rid of, have God remove. That's the deal. Me look at and have God remove. It's not, well, I'm going to work on my character. I'm going to be more patient. I'm just going to be less selfish. No, that's not this program. This program is, I'm going to discover my defects, and I'm going to ask God to come in and do what he needs to do so that I'm a better man for him and for my fellows. That's the program. Right? This is not a self-help program or a self-get-better program. There's a lot of those, but that's not what this is. And I'm not saying those aren't helpful and useful, because those are. Some of us need those things as well. But let's get back on point. It says, it's an effort to face, take a look at, and be rid of, have God remove the things in ourselves which had been blocking me. So there's something in me that's blocking me from that level of joy that this man is talking about. Right? See, I get spun thinking you're blocking me from my joy. And if you changed and they changed and my government changed and the president changed and this changed and my girlfriend changed and my son changed and my dog changed, I will finally be happy. But take a look at yourself. Are we behaving as if that's true? Am I behaving as if you changed, I'll be happy? And I don't see it because I suffer from delusion. I suffer from a disease that does not let me see that I'm deluded, right? I suffer from a disease that does not let me see I really have this problem. Okay, pressing on. So suffering from the spiritual malady, we straighten out when the spiritual malady is overcome. So we're looking for a shift from self-centeredness to God-reliance. So being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what has defeated us, we considered how does self manifest. First and foremost, when you act away, I get irritated. First and foremost. We call that anger. And I go, well, I'm not really angry, right? I'm just a little bothered. I'm just a little upset. I'm just a little miffed, a little peeved, a little perturbed. I'm not bothered at all, right? So I had to look up the definition of anger. I thought anger was when, like, my dad threw tools across the garage. I thought that was anger. My sponsor says, no, that's rage. Right? So we looked up the definition of anger. It says, a feeling of displeasure directed at someone or something. A feeling of displeasure. And I said, whoa, I'm almost always angry. I was almost always experiencing a feeling of displeasure directed at someone or something. And so then it said, if we were to live, don't you want to live? That's why we're here. Because we want to live. When we hear this music, when we hear the celebration, when we hear the joy, we feel alive. I want more of that. That's called living. The joy of living we really have. We really have this thing. I either have it or I don't. Right? See, that's what I want. See, it says, if we were to live, we have to be free of anger. And then right now we go, well, that's not possible. Well, no, it says it is. Right? It is. There's a process by which we go through. Let's go here. So, in dealing with our anger, they dangle a carrot to get us to start. Who are you upset with? Oh, my Aunt Sue and my Aunt Margaret. I can list 9 aunts and my brothers. I can list anybody who I'm upset with. That's the carrot. That's really not what this is about. But I go, oh yeah, I can tell you who I'm upset with, right? And then it asks me the cause. They say this and they do that, right? Then it asks, what does it affect in me? Does it affect my pride, my self-esteem, my ambition? That which I'm trying to get. Are they getting in the way of that which I'm trying to get? Right? But then it says, where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid. That's the key. See, most of us live in what I call column 1 and column 2. I'm upset at you because you did this. I'm upset at you because you did this. I'm upset at you because you did this. Just look at my Facebooks and all my Twitters and my tweets, right? I'm upset, and I don't even have those things, but anyway, it makes sense, right? And so the humility comes in when I start to say, where have I fallen short? What's my part? Where am I less than perfect? Because my whole life, look at my Facebook. I want you to see how perfect my life is. The sunsets and the steak dinners and the right, the amusement parks and all the beauty. That's me showing you, hey, look at how great my life is. But just underneath, there's all these blemishes. I'm a human being. I fall short. And if I haven't cleaned it up, then I got a whole trail of where I've fallen short. That's a whole bunch of opportunities for me to let God come in. Because when I humble myself through this process, something happens called the leveling of pride. Then there's room for His Spirit to flow in, and then we feel amazingly lifted up. It's the breath of His Spirit that lifts us up, right? Right. So if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. It says that anger is poison. So I need to be saved from my anger. How about that? So I'm assuming that we're already open-minded to spiritual concepts. I'm assuming that, right? That's a good place to assume. So it asks us to put out of our minds the wrongs others had done. Sounds a little bit like forgiveness, because what I've learned is when I forgive you, I get set free. I was taught forgive everyone, everything, all the time, and watch what happens. Or I can hang on to a grudge and watch what happens. Right? See, when I harbor a resentment, I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Who suffers? I do, and usually you do. Because when I'm blocked off and when I'm angry, I'm capable of some dastardly things. Fueled by anger, I am an ugly person. Right? So the process is... lost my train of thought. Okay, this was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, right? Though we did not like their symptoms, what they do, we don't like how it made us feel, how it disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. So then it says, here's my solution. Tell everybody about it. No, that's not, right? And then say, hi, good to see you. Right? Right? That's like called two-faced and hypocrite. That's like defects of character. Right? But here's our solution. It says, we ask God. Okay, God reliance. Sounds like prayer. Here comes the solution. Don't miss it. We ask God to help us show them tolerance. We ask God to help us show them pity. Because if they're acting a fool, they're probably off the spiritual beam. And if they're acting a fool, it can't be fun to be them. Right? So we ask God to help us show them tolerance, pity, and patience. When a person offended, we said to ourselves. My old program was, when a person offended, tell everybody. Do you know what that guy did? Do you know what she said? Oh, do you know what the gal at the office is doing? Right? It says, when a person offended, that's not this program. That's my old ideas. That's my old way. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man How can I be helpful to him? Here comes the solution again. God, save me from being angry. Right? God, save me from being angry. So self manifests in various ways. Anger, fear, and then I call it dishonesty or inconsideration in my relationships with others. Right? So it's referred to, we hear it in the fellowship, as a sex inventory. The text doesn't call it a sex inventory. Right? But nevertheless, because I used to get all my, like sixth grade sex ed, I'd get all like, oh no, like talk about sex. And we're not going to talk about sex. We're going to talk about the dishonest dance that I do to get my sex instinct satisfied. How do I treat you when I believe my getting my sex instinct satisfied is being interfered with? How do I behave when I'm denied? Do I behave like a six-year-old kid that didn't get picked on a kickball team? Or worse? That's the stuff that's really, really, really going on. Right? Where am I selfish and dishonest with you so that I can get you to do a little dance to make me happy? That's called manipulation and control and neediness and reliance on you as opposed to reliance on God. Then I could never be in that capacity. I could never be the man of God that he would have me be in your life because I'm still that insecure little boy that needs you to behave a certain way so that I'm happy. Right? That's where I suffer. We're talking about getting free of that stuff. Right? We're not talking about not drinking and not drugging anymore. Right? The text actually infers that that's a low goal. It says start aiming a little higher. Right? The text actually says exactly this. We feel a man is unthinking who believes that sobriety is enough. They're saying that you're off your rocker if you think that's enough. Right? Okay. Then it talks about fear. This is amazing. This book is amazing. So at this point, it says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We set them on paper. What does that mean? Write them down. Right? We set them on paper. Why? Because it says so. Something happens when I language them out. It says, for we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We're either on that basis or we're not. Right? I'm going to press on a little bit in the interest of time. So we name and list our fears. Here comes the solution. Don't miss it. We ask him to remove our fears. So if I'm not listing my fears, then I don't know what to ask God to remove, right? I have fear they'll be upset if I go 2 minutes too long. That's just a fear. I don't have that fear, but that's an example of a fear, right? It says, we ask him to remove our fear, and there's a conjunction. That means we continue. It's not just remove my fear. It's and direct my attention. That's my thought life. I'm asking God to direct my thought life. That's the process. Direct my attention to what you would have me be. Remove my fears. I name them. Not just general, remove my fear. Specific. I was taught to name my fears, right? We ask him to remove our fears and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. That's the deal, right? That's the deal. Then it talks about how we carried ourselves in relationships. It says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Here it comes again. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. This is in my pursuit of getting the sex instinct satisfied. Right? Where have I been? Selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate. Whom had I hurt? See, and this information is not for the world, not for the billboard, not for my postings. It's for a man or a woman in whom I trust and love and feel that God is going to direct me through that person. See, I have to get honest with myself about myself, then I need to get honest with another human being about myself. That's the deal, right? It says we subjected each relationship to this test. We ask God to mold our ideals. We're asking God to mold my ideal. Ideal is something that we strive for, something that we're aiming for. It's not a self-made ideal, and it's not, what's your ideal relationship? No, an ideal is something that I'm trying to live up to be. I ask God to mold that. See, God wants me to be loving, tolerant, patient, kind, forgiving, relenting, caring, understanding, compassionate. Whoa, that is beautiful. Man, when I start to demonstrate those things, my relationships change. When my relationships change, my household changes. When my household changes, my community changes. When my community changes, the world changes. My sponsor always tells me, be a world changer. We get to change the world with this stuff. God changes me, and God changes the world through me. So it says, we hope you are convinced that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. God does the removal. Remember, we're developing God reliance. So it says, we saw our faults, we listed them, we placed them before us in black and white, write them down. We listed our fears thoroughly, we put them on paper, means write them down. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past, we got this all down on paper, means write it down. Right? It means I have, okay, I'm pressing on because I'm running out of time. It says, if you've been thorough, you've written down a lot. See, nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. We hear that all the time in the rooms, right? Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And then sometimes I go, I think I need another commitment. I'm not looking at this. I think I need another service commitment. I already got 3.5 service commitments, but now I'll take a fourth. And then I feel resentful that nobody else is doing them, right? See, it's not about another service commitment. If you want one, take one, but that's not what this is about. It's about being transformed so that God can use you to help the next person down the line, the next alcoholic and addict that's suffering. So you can come to them and your whole deportment shouts at them that you have an answer. Look what God's done in my life. I take zero credit for this. Zero credit for it. So we discover the obstacles in our path. It says what we're trying to get. We're trying to get a new attitude. I need a new attitude. I think you need a new attitude. See, that's the difference. You don't need anything for me to be content. I need a new attitude for me to experience peace regardless of you. Right? So we're trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator. This is how it's done. We discover the obstacles in our path. Then it says, now these obstacles that we discover are about to be cast out. God does the removal. Right? See, something stands between me and my relationship with God. That's the way out, a relationship with God. If you're convinced that you need that way out, you're in the right room. If you're convinced that there's a process that you can experience more of the promises, more joy, you're in the right room. Right? This is the great news that this book has to offer, right? This is the great news and the message that we can potentially carry. We're the vessels that carry this message of hope. And the message isn't, just don't drink no matter what, darn it. That's not the message. I went like, whoa, right? Because I forget it says I'm powerless. I can't not drink. I can't not drink. I need to be mindful of what I'm telling you, right? It says, this. They only thought they lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary until they told someone else all of their life story. Once we've taken this step with holding nothing, that's holding nothing back. Once we've taken this step, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. There you go. We begin to feel the nearness of God in our hearts. Right? What indescribably wonderful. It said we may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. This is where our beliefs turn to actual experience. That's what transforms us. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared often comes strongly. The beginning of me overcoming the drink problem starts to happen here. Right? It says, we feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. We'll wrap up with this. It says, these men and women, they found that a new power, see, we admit we're powerless. Guess what? We found a new power, right? Which wasn't there before. We've now discovered this new power, right? We found a new power, new peace, and new happiness, and a new sense of direction flowed into us. So something is flowing into me, right? It says, this happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. This is what Bill's sponsor told him, and Bill always called Ebby his sponsor. He said, my friend promised when these things were done. When these things were done. See, I would say, waste no more time. Time is your most precious gift that you have. We do not know how much time we got. We don't know how much time we have left. I have a friend in this room that diligently tried to perform resuscitative CPR on somebody this afternoon or this morning to no avail, who was one of us. 61-year-old person died of this condition. We don't know how much time we have, right? We don't know how much time we have. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. Right? That's the saving grace, a new relationship with our Creator. In addition to that, we would have the elements of a way of living which answered all of our problems, not just the drink and drug problem or whatever we're doing habitually. Food, gambling, sex, shopping, control, you name it. Hoarding, you name it. Whatever we're doing habitually, right? This process, it says it will solve all of our problems. But don't take my word for this. Do this for yourself and watch what happens. Thank you for letting me share.